Deham pranamapindriyanyapi chalam. Om Deham pranamapindriyanyapi chalam. Buddhincha shunyam viduhu. Buddhincha shunyam viduhu. Shri Balanda Jatopamastrahamiti. Shri Balanda Jatopamastrahamiti. Brantha Brisham Vadinaha. Brantha Brisham Vadinaha. Maya Shakti Vilasa Kalpita Mahavya Moha Samharine. Maya Shakti Vilasa Kalpita Mahavya Moha Samharine. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam. Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam. Shri Dakshina Murtaye. Back to verse 5. Let's do the Sandhi. Deham pranam api indriyani api chalam buddhim cha shunyam viduhu. Shri bala andha jada upamaha tu aham iti brantaha bhrisham vadinaha. Maya shakti vilasa kalpita maha vyamoha samharine. Tasmai shri guru murtaye nama idam. Shri dakshina murtaye. Okay? So deham, the body. Pranam. Prana is the vital force. Deha, the body. Api, also. The indriyas. The indriyas are twofold. There's the jnanendriyas, which are the five sense organs. Jnana means knowledge, and kadana means means. So the means of knowledge are called the jnanendriyas, means of knowledge. Those are the five sense organs. Then also, there's the organs of action called the karmendriyas, karma indriya. The karmendriyas are such things as your ability to speak, to move, to grasp, to move your hands, to walk, to use your feet. The powers of excretion and of sexuality are the karmendriyas, the five organs of action that this body is able to do, just in very broad strokes. These are the five organs of action. So we have the deha, the prana, also the indriyas, the five sense organs, and the five organs of action. The chalam buddhi. The chalam buddhi means the mind. It's actually called, in Sanskrit, it's a Buddhist, it's one of these schools of Buddhism called the kshanika vijnanavadins. For the kshanika, kshanika means momentary. So it would be thought, 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 thought. So the buddhi is actually not only, from the Buddhist perspective, it is not only just the sort of reflection of consciousness, which would have the sense of aham, as well the aham in the vritti, and also the nama rupa. But it isn't that. What they see is that each vritti is not exactly what we would call a vritti. It is a moment of consciousness, which includes both the consciousness and the object of consciousness. It's called vijnanam. And so the best way to understand that is that if you didn't have self-knowledge, there is a natural superimposition between the buddhi and the conscious being. Right? The buddhi will take, say, I am the conscious being. So, in a sense, you're taking consciousness and the buddhi to be one thing. Okay, so far? But now, the buddhi, in terms of the vritti, is continually changing. That's kshanika. Moment, 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 moment. And so that Kshanika Vijnana, the word Vijnana in Buddhism, in Buddhism generally, includes the consciousness and the nama rupa as one thing. The consciousness and the image and the vritti are just one thing. And because the image is continually changing, you have a flick, Swamiji would say bleep, bleep consciousness. Bleep, 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 bleep. And the only thing that holds these bleeps together, consciousness, 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 each one is involved with a nama-rupa of sorts, is that there's an anuvritti. Anuvritti means there's something continuing. The meaning of the first bleep is somehow related to the second bleep, somehow related to the third bleep. So there's kind of a transference of meaning, even though each bleep, consciousness, 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 is itself independent of the others. And so this is called Kshanika Vijnanavadin, this particular philosophy. Then there's another one called Shunyam, the Shunyavadins. Do not acknowledge. This is difficult because even within the Shunyavadins, Shunyavada is interpreted differently. But Shunya does not mean non-existence. It means emptiness. Emptiness is a much better word for Shunya. And what it will say is that this whole world is empty. This is Nagarjuna, who's a major philosopher and maybe the originator of this particular school. The Shunyavadins say that this whole world has no essence, no being. Kind of like our Maya, but they split the Maya from the Paramarthika, the absolute nature of the self. So what they'll say, though, it's very close to Vedanta if it's interpreted this way. So this is one interpretation, a Buddhist interpretation, not a Vedanta looking at the Buddhist. It's Buddhist interpretation, that this creation itself is devoid of essence. And then the Paramarthika Shunyata, the absolute Shunyata, is that which the reality itself, which they don't name, is Shunya, means devoid of Namarupa. So if you take these two and put them together, the absolute Shunyata, which is devoid of any type of duality, and then the Shunyata, the relative Shunyata, which is devoid of any essence or being, we can make sense of that. But we would say it differently, that the Paramarthika Shunyata is Brahman. We would say that the Namarupa, the manifestation of the creation, the Shunyata of the creation, is what is Mithya. Because we also say that the creation has no independent being whatsoever. So if we just look at the creation as Shunyata, empty of essence, it has no being of its own. And the Shunyata of the Paramarthika, of the absolute reality, is that which is completely empty, devoid of any type of duality or namarupa. And so here, if we say, from the standpoint of this verse, what they are saying, and this is something that's often, this is a way that Buddhism is very often interpreted, maybe even by many Buddhists. But I don't think it's at all what the Buddha meant, so let me just explain this. The Buddha himself would say, he had different three major principles. One was the interconnectedness and the causal relationship of everything in the creation, the interconnectedness of all things in the creation. He also had an understanding of the laws of karma, right? But the one that is perhaps the most, the one that I feel is most misunderstood, this interconnectedness of all things, the interrelationship of all things, that's true in Buddhism, it's true in Advaita Vedanta. Karma, transmigration, all of these things are true in Buddhism and in Advaita Vedanta, though the transmigration of the jiva is dealt with differently because of this one. This one is called the Anatmabada, that there is no self. Anatma, there is no self. And the example that they give for proving that there is no self is based upon what we actually experience in the world. Like, say, for any object in the world, if you give it a name, like this stool, this is named stool, okay? So this stool, though, upon analysis, becomes these pieces of different pieces of wood that are put together in a particular fashion, and there's nails and this and that, you know, and varnish. There's so many things involved in this one word, stool. And so, where is the stool? Is the stool the leg, or is the stool the top? The Buddha uses the example of a chariot. You call, because that's back in his era, you call something, you call a chariot a chariot. So you call a chariot a chariot. Okay. But upon analysis, where and what is the chariot? Because there's all of these different things that are put together, and when they're all put together, it's called chariot. But all of the different things also have names, you know? Like you have the wheels and the axles, and you have the reins, and you have the yoke, and you have the chair, and you have the box, and you have the intricate paint job. There's so many things involved in this. So which part is the chariot? Because all of these parts are actually divisible and distinct. So what is there really such a thing as a chariot? Or is the chariot just a name for a conglomerate of parts that are put together in a particular way? So then he said, there is not really a thing called chariot. It's a concept. It's a word that embraces many things. So really, the chariot has no real existence. Like that, in your experience of yourself, this body, mind, sense organs, which part is you? You know, is it your heart? Is it your brain? Is it your sense organs? Which part is me? Where is the me located? Where is the self located? Which part is it? Where to find it? Because this body is made of many, many different parts. So in fact, the name self is just a nama. It's just a name. I can divide this, the Buddhist different schools like the Panchaskandhas and what, we can divide it up in many different ways, but you're still, what they're doing is showing that the mind and the buddhi and the sense organs and the body and all of these different functions put together are called the self. So where is that self to be found? There is no self. You can't find a self. There's just an interconnected whole, you know, that you're naming the self. Now let me tell you why the Buddha takes this perspective. Because it's if you understand why he takes this perspective, then it makes sense. For the Buddha and for all of the different darshanas, different philosophical systems, especially now I'm talking the Indian philosophical systems, like it be Sankhya or Yoga, or the different schools of Buddhism, or Advaita Vedanta, or Mimamsa. There's six major schools of darshanas in India, and then three different schools that really don't accept the Vedas as the means of knowledge. Buddhism is one of those schools called Bauddha that does not accept the Vedas as a means of knowledge. When the Vedas are not accepted, that teaching pramana is not accepted as a means of knowledge, then the spiritual path, the philosophical system that also has innate to it a spiritual path for gaining liberation, right, has to be based on knowledge. All of the Indian darshanas are based on knowledge, not just your imagination. I think it's like this. I'll put forward this philosophy and see how many people can buy into that. You're just making the thing up. That doesn't happen in India. You have to back up your philosophical system, whatever it may be, whether it's Advaita Vedanta or Sankhya or Yoga or the Buddhism. You have to tell which means of knowledge you are using that can support what you have to say, right? And if you're not using a given means of knowledge, then whatever they have to say is not going to be contained in the logic involved in your philosophical system. See? So for the Buddha, the main pramanas are perception, pratyeksha, and also anumana, inference. Some others, when you have these as your two major means of knowledge, sometimes you can collapse some of the other means of knowledge into it, like perception, inference could easily contain, inference could easily contain presumption. They're very close to each other. And so they could collapse into one inference. Also, perception could take in what we call anupalabdhi. Through perception, we see there's no elephant in the room. So some philosophers will collapse these two. In Advaita Vedanta, Mimamsa, Sankhya, we don't accept that because I'm not seeing the absence of the elephant. Right? I'm seeing the rug and everybody around it, but I'm certainly not experiencing the absence of the elephant. So something else has to take place. So anyway, there's so many arguments and texts really going through all of the ins and outs of every means of knowledge. And so we would just, if we say that the Buddha and Buddhism only really accepts perception and inference, know that some of the other means of knowledge that exist and are available to us, they will collapse into one or the other. But they will not accept the Vedas. So it's really, if we're really talking, you can say the Buddhists accept our means of knowledge, the regular means of knowledge that you have as a human being, but they don't accept revealed means of knowledge. So anything that is a revealed means of knowledge, they don't deal with, they don't say it's true, they don't say it's not true, they just don't accept the revealed means of knowledge. It's not a pramana. They don't accept the Vedas as a pramana. Other schools like the Charvakas, the materialists, and also the Jainas, they don't accept the Vedas as a pramana. They have their own philosophical discipline, their own religion, and all of that. So now, just think about this. If you really only accept perception, and then all of the other five means of knowledge are based upon perception. Even if we accept Shabda Pramana, Shabda Pramana we use all the time. Shabda means, you know, somebody. I ask somebody the directions, they give me the directions, I think that they're a sane, good person, I follow their directions, and I go my way. All of the textbooks that we read, it has to do with Shraddha, in the veracity, the truth of what the other, of what that scholar or that person is telling us. Because we believe in the veracity of the knowledge that's being given, and we have Shraddha or confidence in the person, in the scientist or the mathematician or whoever it is, we have respect for them, then we study what they have to say and we learn that. But we ourselves didn't invent it. We study history, we weren't there, you know. We have Shraddha because these, we could be there. We could go there, you know. And it's here in this plane within samsara, so it's knowledge gained that is available to us to gain, right? Whereas the Advaita Vedanta, or the knowledge held in the first portion of the Vedas called the Karmakanda, is not available to us to gain through our means of knowledge. Our sense organs are all going outward. Our sense organs and our means of knowledge are only good for what takes place within samsara, not outside. And they also can't turn around and look at, you know, a non-dual conscious being that is absolutely free of all namarupa, including space and time. So the Buddha cannot use words or teaching methodologies born of the Vedas that take you step by step by step in a traditional methodology of a traditional methodology that we call the prakriyas to differentiate the samsara, the things that we can know through our sense organs, through our means of knowledge, to differentiate those things that can be objectified and known from that which is not able to be an object of knowledge. The Vedanta will say that which is not available to be an object of our knowledge need not be available for that because it is self-evident. And so it is not something away from me. It is my very self-evident being. And there is a means of knowledge that will allow me and help me to differentiate all of the things that are objectifiable, from that which is not objectifiable. And so we have all of these Veda-born, Upanishadic-born prakriyas that we use. The Buddha does not accept those prakriyas. He does not accept the Veda as any type of authority or any type of pramana. And so therefore, in order to recognize that non-dual shunyata, emptiness, because his Nagarjuna's definition itself of emptiness is that it is free of nama-rupa. Nama-rupa means creation. So if it's free of nama-rupa, and it is, see, that's why in Buddhism, if you think that if you translate as emptiness as non-existence, that's a huge problem. And it's incorrect also. If you translate it as the void or emptiness, the void is not non-existence. It means it's just free of something, completely free of something. Right? And so emptiness or the void, I don't like the void because it's a little woo-woo, but I like emptiness. Emptiness it just seems solid to me. You know? It has none of that. No nama-rupa. It is and it is free of nama-rupa. Okay, so that would be the shunyata, but that shunyata cannot be realized by you through any means of knowledge. And so, the Buddha, knowing that, he will never talk about it or define it. It is something to be recognized. And there are prakriyas in Buddhism to go through that recognition, that process of recognition. And they're really meditative experiences. The first part of them have to do with really contemplating on the Four Noble Truths. And then there's a lot of value systems in this called the Ashtangika Marga. There's very, very value systems, very, very, the same as there are in most of the darshanas. The value systems of being a good person, of being kind, of being honest in your work, of speaking the truth. There's a lot of them. But there's a steady progression to bringing the mind into a state of freedom of samadhi. And that takes place, once you get to that state of even practicing samadhi, it takes place very, very gradually, very, very slowly. There's four major levels of that samadhi to where I get to a place where I recognize I am for the moment. I resolve myself into that absolute shunyata. But that is never called the Atma. Because the word Atma is used for this body, mind, sense organs, which is really an Atma. And so what this means is that in Buddhism, because of the prakriyas and because of the means of knowledge that are being used, we use what's only called the immediate meaning of the word. It's called the vachyarta, the immediate meaning of the word. Like if I say red, it means red. Yeah. So all of the words, as we're used to, land upon something in the creation. And so every word in the creation has its meaning. If I say, for instance, existence, what will existence mean? If you don't know anything about Brahman, it means that things exist. Or what does consciousness mean? Consciousness has many meanings. I'm really conscious of that. I'm really aware of that. Yes, I'm a conscious being. You know, I'm enjoying consciousness. So the words that we use are stuck within duality. They don't make use of what is called the lakshana or the implied meaning of the word. And so unless these words can be handled in such a way as to point to what is implied by the words, you can't get out of the samsara, the duality itself, through the use of words or any type of teaching. And so the the self keep using the words only to define what exists in the world, the self is called anatma, because what you take to be the self is not the self. For us as a Vedantin, used calling the self the anatma, calling the body, mind, sense organs anatma, would be perfect for us also if we don't have the implied meaning of the word, which allows us to negate the use of the word atma for all of the things that we normally refer to it due to ignorance within samsara. But they don't have that. They don't use that particular teaching methodology or using the implied meaning of the word. And so instead of ever being able to use the word atma, they only use anatma. And so what that does is erase the who am I question. Because who are you? You're just a conglomerate of these parts put together. There is no self here. This all is mitya. This all is shunyata, free of any type of essence. And so when you do recognize through this meditative process and the Ashtangika yoga that there is a Brahman, which they will not name, but they will call it differently. There is a Brahman that is not tied up with your own being. And that's a big problem that a lot of Buddhists have also. That kind of non-dual meditative recognition that is gained through the Buddhist prakriyas does not resolve into I am. That is actually the truth of my nature. It resolves into something which is wonderful and non-dual and full of ananda. But the self is not connected, because this lakshana vritti is not there. That lakshana vritti here means the implied meaning of the word. You have the atma, which is the conscious being, and then through the teaching methodology you pull off all of these things that have been superimposed on it, all the while yourself remaining. It's just yourself is then realized to be the non-dual Brahman. So the self is never given up, ever. It's just that the things that are superimposed upon it are differentiated. So because of this, the Shunyavadin, he says, so I'm just explaining this, Kshanika Vijnanavadin and the Shunyavadins as two schools of Buddhism. And there are other schools where the deha, like the Charvaka, is considered to be me, the Atma. This physical body is me, and when you die, you're dead. That's it. They're called the Charvakas. Then there are some types of Charvakas that take it not just to be the body, but the body and the prana. And some will also take the indriyas to belong to the body. So that's just subtler levels of Charvaka, but they all die. When the body dies, all of these things go away. Then they say, so the Kshanika Vijnanavadin, the school of Buddhism, Shunyata Vidduhu. So now down the second line, he says, the vadiness, now a vadin is a proponent of a certain philosophical discipline, a philosophical school. It could be your own personal belief system. You become a vadin, a vadin of that belief system. So you're a proponent of that particular belief system, makes you a vadin. So the vadinaha are these different proponents of different philosophical belief systems or spiritual paths or whatever. They're called vadis. And these vadins are brisham. They're vehement. They're vehement in reference to the school that they're a proponent of. So these vadins, these vehement vadins, they vidduhu. These vadins vehemently believe, vidduhu, they know, it's not that they think they believe, they know that I, the Atma, is really just the deha, or the prana, or the indriyas, you know, or they think of the Atma, they know the Atma to be the Kshanika Vijnanavan, Shalam Buddhim, or they know the Atma to be Shunya. So he says here, these vadins vehemently, who are Bhranta, who are confused, okay? they vehemently think of, they know the aham. Now this next one. Shri Bala Anda Jada Upamaha to aham. They're deluded, they think, they know what?
Did you get a checkup?
Yeah.
Something wrong?
I think someone needs more to come.
They're watchdogs over the invisibles. They bark at the invisibles.
There was a car earlier, what? Like a grey sort of a car, so I don't know, Morricone here.
Was it red?
No, greyish.
Greyish. Yep. Are we expecting anybody?
I didn't see.
Are we expecting anybody? Bharat on Wednesday.
Who?
No, Bharat's coming on Wednesday. Okay, yeah. It's okay.
When is
Kristen will take her.
Huh? Is Nella coming?
Not, probably not, but Ben's coming back on Wednesday.
Okay.
I think. He could come back on Tuesday. He'll come back. He said he'd come back as soon as he can, but it wouldn't be Monday. It would be Tuesday at the earliest.
Anybody else is coming to
Do you see somebody?
No. You. I heard someone stepping.
It could be Kristen taking care of the dogs. Yes.
It's invisibles.
Wow. Yep. The invisibles. So anyway, these vadinaha vehemently propound, really, the self to be the deha, prana, the indriyas, flexuka, the kshanika vijnanapan, the bleep consciousness, Swamiji calls it, or shunyam. Just like, so they take the aham. Do you see it that? Shri Bala Anda Jada Upamaha to aham. To me, just means, it just signifies, differentiate. So it says, they take the aham. They take the self, the I to be, like women, Shri. So what is, you know, Swamiji and other the more, the ones who feel embarrassed by that, Shri. And all the women just smile, I guess. You know, he says, even Swami will say something like, he won't say the uneducated women, but it's just the women that are just involved in cooking and keeping house and chatting together and are not really interested in viveka or gaining self-knowledge. So those women, or children, the balas, the children, or the people who are anda, blind, They can't see, they don't have the capacity to do that. Or the jada. Jada means the dull-witted people. So these bodies, just like, okay, upamaha means just like women or children or blind people or the jadas, you know, the dull people, deluded, being deluded, brantaha, they when they say vidduhu, means this is their conviction. They believe, they have this strong, vidduhu means they know, they have this strong commitment, which is deluded, that the Atma, that this I is just this body, or you could say it's the body and the sense organs, you know, or it's the kshanika vijnanam, or it's shunya. It could be many, many, many things, okay? So, what do we say? You just cross that out. Put some other people in there. Mm-hmm. But all he's really talking about is the avivekis. You know, the avivekis. The ones who don't use their mind in that way. And so I actually, just as a little quick aside, I had forgotten about this verse and so until we started... when we decided to do the Dakshinamurti, I hadn't thought about this verse for quite a while. But I recently had an interesting insight that not all people or any people at all times in their life have much interest in using their buddhi in a philosophical way. Because I was noticing for myself, unless really I'm teaching Vedanta and then in that arena that Buddhi is being used. But when I'm working outside and gardening or taking the dogs for a walk or sitting by the river, you know, or cleaning up the farm or whatever I'm doing, it's kind of it's very physical and it's very much being with nature. And I really have no desire to use my Buddhi. I like to just be there with nature doing that work, and I find that very highly enjoyable and satisfying. And then I don't... and then so I was realizing this and realizing, you know, I've kind of really moved away from using this Buddhi analytically to read and comment on all of these papers or to lecture academically on certain subject matters. I have no interest in that at all, and I never really have, but I've just done it because it was my prerogative to do the job that I'm doing, and so I have done, you know, a lot of reading of things I didn't want to read and thinking about things that I didn't want to think about, you know, and really using my mind analytically because I need to do that when I'm studying people's dissertations and commenting on them and reading people's papers. I have to read it carefully to really understand what they're saying so I can make a meaningful comment. They've spent probably 20, 30, 40 hours writing the paper. And so I do my dharma to read the paper carefully. It takes 45 minutes, usually an hour for a 10 or 12 page paper, to read it carefully and to do that work. And there was a time when that was okay, you know. But now the timing is I'm more of a Vaishya. The Vaishya, you know, there's the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas, you know, who are the priests and scholars, and also the, you know, people who are spiritual also, get under there, in a sense. The Kshatriyas, the people who really do have to use their mind in planning and in warfare and administrative jobs, government jobs, where they're at a higher position. They really have to use and engage their mind. And then there's the Vaishyas, who are basically in agriculture. They also do some trade and things like that, but their primary job is in agriculture. And now that I have this farm, I realize that a lot of what I do is agricultural. And it's being out in nature and planting things and cleaning things up and being with the dogs and doing this and that. It's just very grounded, very, very simple, very grounded work. And there is no real need to be so centered on your buddhi in terms of gaining knowledge and all of this type of thing. You're more involved with the earth in a way, and that's what a Vaishya is or what a farmer is. That's what they want to do, you know. They want to be involved with the earth, and there's something extremely wonderful and subtle and beautiful about that. So I just had that kind of realization, depending upon your karma this lifetime around and the opportunities that present themselves to you, there are many, many very beautiful and meaningful things to do that are just grounded in Ishwara in a way. They're grounded in farming or gardening or growing vegetables or making your area beautiful, beautifying your area. It's grounded in that. And there's something that is very subtle and pure about that. And your mind isn't cluttered with all of these words and all of these facts. So I just all of a sudden at myself gained a lot of love or respect for farmers, for people who I think it's a great punya to be able to be that close with the earth. There's some beautiful poets who are farmers also. So anyway, I just wanted to say that. But there's other things. There's things beautiful about being a woman also, that maybe people laugh at, but actually it's a very, very highly grounded life, because you're taking care of others and you're keeping the home and doing things that you naturally do, and there's something very deep about it.
No,
no, I know. I know. I didn't mistake it. So, you know, we laugh at these things or at the freedom of children, you know. But the point is not that so much as that the buddhi really has to be inquiring into what's really going on here. And not everybody is in a situation in their life where they even want to do that. It's just simply not meaningful for the life that you find yourself in. And that can be, that life can be very beautiful and very positive. It's just that you're not interested in that inquiry at this time. You have to think of, for each one of us, it has been an infinite number or countless number of lifetimes that now, for whatever reason, whatever punya, you become interested in gaining this knowledge. Who knows why? Yeah. Considered a blessing. But some lives are a lot sweeter than others in terms of what you do with your day, what you have to do with your day. Anyway, I thought I'd point that out, because it really was such a kind of a, it seemed silly maybe, but it was kind of an awakening for me to realize how much I was enjoying just being out here and taking care of things. So now the next line. Maya Shakti Vilasa Kalpita Maha Vyamoha Samharine. So at the bottom it says, my salutations to Dakshinat, this is my salutations to the Lord Dakshinamurti, who is now in the form of my guru. So salutations to him. Now read this compound, this is a whole long compound backwards. To him who is the one who is Samharine, who destroys, is the destroyer of the Maha, this great Vyamoha, this great, great samsara that we find ourselves in, caught in, as though this is the reality. And all of our sense organs and organs of action support this creation as the reality, which is a grand Maha, infinite Vyamoha, an infinite delusion that we find ourselves in, and we're all in it together. We're all in it together. So that supports it. It's not like you're alone and everybody is looking at you thinking, boy, you are suffering from a psychosis. Because it's the opposite of what is real. It's the opposite of the truth, but then you're included in it. Like a dream character in a dream. The dream character in the dream belongs in that dream. All of their sense organs, their organs of action, everything is meant to be a participant within duality. And yet, someone becomes a mumukshu and it catapults their being out of that duality just through knowledge, just through the breaking through that maha moha. Okay? My namaskars to my teacher, the Lord, and who is really the Lord Dakshinamurti, who destroys that maha vyamoha kalpita, which is projected by the vilasa, by the play of the powers, the shakti of maya. So the maya comes from unmanifest condition, projects as the world, goes back into unmanifest condition, projects as a whole universe. The whole shakti of the universe is only maya. And every body, mind, sense organs, every jiva is part of that projection and totally contained in it. 360 degrees and up and down, you're like dropped into a bucket of water and you're totally immersed in that water. Everywhere you look, there's only water. Whereas wherever we look, there's only maya. So maya is our environment. Maya is our reality. And the sense organs, the organs of action, the whole body is meant to participate in maya. You breathe and there is air to breathe, right? You know, you eat and there is food. You eat, there is food, right? It's not like you come in here, there's no air, and there's no food, and there's no water. But for you to survive, you need food, you need water, you need to be able to breathe. But of course these things are there, because you are part of the scheme of things. And so you're on one side, you know, as the knower, the eater, the breather, right? The drinker. And then on the other side, there has to be a sense object which is compatible with that. You have eyes, but there's no forms. You have ears, but there is no sound. So then we think, well, what are those things? What are they for? Why do we have those things? We have these things. What are they supposed to do? But in the Maya, there's sattva, rajas, and tamas. That means there's consciousness, the ability to know because of sattva. There's the ability to move because of rajas, whether we're talking as a whole creation or just an individual. And there's the objects to interact with because of tamas. Right? And so this world is an interconnected whole that includes both seer and seen and the organs of action from the rajas that allows us to move about in this world. So it's one interconnected whole. And then you want to know who you are. You want to know who you are with the means of knowledge that really only look out here, that only can objectify experience. You are the self-evident self. You are the self-evident conscious being. But nobody's there to tell you about that. They just are there to identify with it. The Maya just identifies with it. It doesn't have a means of knowing it. It just takes it to be itself. It takes you to be itself. So Dakshinamurti is the first teacher in the form of Shiva. The first teacher in the form of Dakshinamurti is starts the sampradaya. The sampradaya starts really with the creation in the form of Dakshinamurti as the first teacher. And there's Guru Sisha, Guru Sisha, Guru Sisha. Okay. Tat Sat. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.